Hello, and welcome to another episode of Read It With Whiskey. You guys came to the rescue over on Instagram, and apparently I'm going to keep my introduction the same. So welcome to Read It With Whiskey. My name is Laura Jensen, and I am the author of the Shockwave series, and I'm also your host. Today, we are going to be talking to O.R. Lee all about his book, Reba Kite. But first, let me tell you a little bit about O.R. O.R. Lee, also known as Ollie, was raised and educated in North Wales. Ollie spent his early 20s working for a theater in education music troupe for as long as it took to feel like his GCSE in Welsh language had provided its money's worth. Since then, he's lived in Portsmouth and currently works as a laboratory analyst. His biggest failure as a writer has been in his attempts to settle on a genre, having written about Middle Eastern vampires, African mercenaries, and supernatural Welsh murderers. His first properly published novel, Reba Kite, is a near-future speculative fiction story set in the Persian Gulf. And we're going to talk about that book right now. So this is what Reba Kite is all about. What have you learned in an environmental crisis the world thought it had under control was actually an alien invasion? Growing up in the aftermath of an asteroid moon strike which showered the Earth with deadly spores, Tahira promised her childhood friend, Zareen, that overcoming the crisis would one day unite their feuding Azerbaijani and Iranian people. Tahira is now a biologist for a corporation constructing experimental towers which forces the spores, known as Reba Kites, to germinate into harmless colonies. Rumors of Reba Kite colonies forming into flesh-eating, animal-mimicking monsters on the Iranian annex are largely dismissed as propaganda from the Talafi, an Iranian militant group who oppose Azeri occupation. But when Tahira makes a discovery linking these stories to the skyscraper towers, her own employer suppresses her findings and frames her as a Talafi collaborator. In a race for her freedom and her life, Tahira has only one person she can rely on, Zareen, now an Iranian freedom fighter. Together, they must escape Azeri police and Talafi militants and survive their horrifying next stage of the Reba Kite's development. Only if they expose the truth can the world unite against a danger which has been gathering at its feet while everyone was watching the sky. Ooh, I love a good science fiction novel. And this one definitely caught me off guard. I didn't really know what to expect. I've been tending to not read the back of a book until like the end. I don't think I actually read the description of this book until just now. So I like to be surprised when I'm in the pages, and I definitely was surprised. And you will find that out in our interview. So let's get on with it. Let's go talk to O.R. Welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the interview podcast featuring science fiction and fantasy authors. My name is Laura Jentinen, your host and the author of the Shockwave series. I am also a book club moderator, speaker, and avid reader, truly invested in every author's story. Within this podcast, I bring to you, the reader, all the behind-the-scenes secrets to how these guest indie authors bring their books into the world. If you are a sci-fi fantasy reader, then you need to hear from these authors. Let's learn about the person behind the page. Sit back, sip some whiskey, and lean in to these self-published authors. Hello, Ollie, and welcome to Read It With Whiskey. How's your day going so far?
Hey, not too bad at all. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm more excited about my day now that we're talking because I just finished your book. As if we're recording this, I finished it last week. And I was just on my Instagram saying how usually there's like a month between when I finish the book and when I talk to the author, and I'm so excited that it's so close because it's so fresh in my mind. So I'm so excited.
Oh, and, that's it. No, that wouldn't have worked for me. I'd have forgotten everything.
Right. And that happens. I have to take extensive notes just in case the interviews are far away. But anyway, I would love for you to kind of fill in our listeners. Who are you and what are you all about? Why'd you become a writer?
So I'm Ollie. I live in the south of England, and many of your guests, I'm sure, I've always written. You know, I can't remember a time I've ever not written. For me, it was all kind of an outworking of the fact that, my imagination was always my preferred playground, if you like. You know, I always just preferred living in my imagination wherever possible. And putting that down on paper and showing it to people makes it a bit more acceptable and a little bit less kind of reclusive. And I suppose later in life, that kind of found an outworking in have you ever kind of been kind of like play by post role play sort of thing, you know, where someone writes a bit of something and then the other person takes over and it's that sort of thing? And then that got to the point where I had a really big collaborative project with about six people, and we got to the end and thought, converting this into a novel could be fun. So we did, and that was my first novel. And my first three written novels were all collaborative role plays like that, and it wasn't until I got to like a fourth or fifth one that I started writing by myself.
Very cool. Yeah, I've had a few different people on the show who've been interested in like the role-playing gamelet type things. And I've never personally gotten into it, but I've always been fascinated by it. And so that's so cool. And I mean, it's funny though, because when I was a kid, we would always play games and we would play make-believe, exact same concept. But as a kid, it's just a little bit different mindset, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. I think when you're young, you're just freer to live in your own imagination a bit more. And I've always found this kind of any kind of game, actually, there's kind of, you can take two streams to it. You can either play for the game aspect, so, you know, the challenge and the skill involved, or you can play for the kind of the imaginative storytelling aspect. Like even when I play Xbox, you know, this morning I was playing Far Cry 5, and rather than just sort of playing it on the highest difficulty and trying to do the best I can, I prefer to just kind of wander around the world, telling the story in my head and imagining who my character is. And so, yeah, it's just one of the aspects of gaming that you can kind of really dive into.
Yeah. And create that whole world, create the whole character behind the scenes kind of history in your mind. And that's what writing is. It's creating
absolutely, yeah,
these worlds and characters, and oh, so much fun. So you've been writing for a while then, and you said you have written quite a few books. So are those books still out there for the world, or how many do you have published officially?
So Rebekite is the only one which is, I'll tell a lie. I do have two now. One was a sort of a minor project, but Rebekite is essentially my seventh novel. The other ones, I've gone to quite actually a bit of effort to kind of erase their existence from the internet, actually, because one of the sort of the two-edged aspects of self-publishing is that it's great that it's easy, but it's also a little bit too easy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it meant as soon as you've got a book in your hands, you think, great, I can throw it out there into the world. And then 10 years later, you look and go, this doesn't really represent me as a writer anymore. And actually, anyone who read that probably wouldn't have been interested in reading a great deal more. It's an interesting thing, because as writers, we have to kind of overcome, you know, imposter syndrome, and we have to kind of build ourselves up and convince ourselves, yes, we can do this, we can be good enough. But I think there's also a responsibility on us to, you know, when we get to that stage of sending our works out to agents, publishers, and whatever else, and the rejections start coming in, to not be too quick to just assume that you're an unappreciated genius in your time, and that actually maybe you're not as good a writer as you're going to be yet. The reason Rebekite is now my main published work is because it's the first novel I've had where I've put it out there. I've tried to pitch it to agents. It's the third book I've pitched to agents. The first four I didn't even bother. And but it was the first book where, you know, the rejection started coming in, but I felt overwhelmingly convinced that it wasn't the quality of the book that was the issue. It was, you know, I'd maybe just kind of not the right book for the right time for a number of agents. And, you know, and actually trying to find agents who accept sci-fi is a lot harder than many other genres. And, you know, you quickly get a feel for what people are accepting, and also the kind of authors that people accept are accepting at any one time. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know what, whatever happens, I think I owe it to this book to kind of put it out there and give it a shot.
I'm glad you did, because I really enjoyed it. And I mean, we're going to talk a little bit more about the book in a few minutes, but but yeah, it wasn't that I was surprised that I liked it. I knew I would like it, but I was surprised how invested I got into the characters. And that just is props to your writing, because I was very invested with the characters. And like at the end, we're not going to talk spoilers, but oh, I was just freaking out for a little bit there. And
excellent.
But no, I'm really glad that you decided to go ahead and get this one out into the world, because I really enjoyed it. And so for these other books that you wrote in the past, are those things that you would go back to and kind of revamp and republish in the future after you've edited them?
One other one that I have out now is actually a book that I wrote actually as a birthday present for my wife a few years back, which was just sort of on the cusp of, is it good enough to kind of do anything with? And so I have actually sort of brassed that up and put that up on Amazon as well. I haven't really done anything in terms of pushing it or promoting it in a big way, but, you know, it's there just so that if anyone reads this and wants to get more of my writing, there is another book out there. Everything before that, I don't know, because it would almost be kind of rewriting it from scratch. You know, each one of them is very, you know, has a place in my heart, and I have fond memories of writing it, and in particular the ones where I was writing with other people. It's kind of a memory between me and other people, many of whom I'm still in touch with, and they've gone on and they've written their own stuff. And you know, but you know, it's also, as with developing any kind of skill, it's part of the journey, isn't it? You know, you look back at a book and you can see actually kind of why this didn't work, and it's like a physical marker of how much further you've come as a writer. Even the one I've just touched up, I finished editing it only a couple of weeks before it went to publication. And as I was editing it, I was like, this is only 2 years old, and this writing seems really amateurish to me now. It's like, I've obviously improved a heck of a lot just in 2 years. So I don't think so. I do share them with people. I have physical copies downstairs because, you know, in the print of demand world, it's easy just to print one copy and just to have on your shelf and show people. But yes, no, I don't think I'll be revisiting too many of those.
Yeah. Well, and now you probably have other ideas that you want to go and jump on anyway, which we'll talk about later on. Yeah. I know. I think that's one of the problems I have, is that I have too many ideas and not enough time to get them down. So I'm like, I have a bunch of notebooks and like on my phone, little notes where it's like, okay, this story idea. And like, I'll branch off into other ideas. I'm like, I got to slow down and just finish the series I'm currently working on. And hopefully by the time this episode airs, I will be like getting ready to publish the final book in my series. We shall see. It's been a long time coming. All right. So let's dive into your book, Rebekite. And I've heard it pronounced Rebekite and Rebekite in the past. So it's Rebekite is how it's pronounced, correct?
I say Rebekite. Okay. It's named after an actual real life mineral, right. Which in turn is named after a German mineralogist. So therefore the IE would be a Ebe Rebekite. However, as I've mentioned many times, I actually work with asbestos myself at work, and the CEO of my company pronounces it Rebekite.
Right.
And you'd think that if anyone could be trusted, it's him. But then if you get to know him, you kind of wonder, maybe not actually. But yes, no, I'm very sure. I'm going with Rebekite. And of course, there's aspects of the book which actually kind of depend on people going down that way, you know, the way it shortens to Rebes rather than anything else. But yeah, if anyone's out there pronouncing it Rebekite, and I know there are, they're not strictly wrong.
All right. Yeah, I had wondered that when I first picked it up. I was like, is it Rebekite or Rebekite? And then as I read in the book, Reeb is used, R-E-E-B. And so I'm like, okay, that's how it's going to be pronounced in this book. So that's how I've been doing it. But I just wanted to clear that up for anybody else who looked at the shelf. But yeah, so Gal, give us a synopsis. What is this book about?
I often describe it as a book that's trying to be a couple of things, actually, because that's just because of how the book came about. But fundamentally, it was... you know how they say, you know, write what you know. And I was having a bit of a creative dearth at one point. And I was thinking, what do I know? You know, I sit in a little lab looking at asbestos samples all day. And I was trying to, and I just hit on this silly idea of, you know, kind of what if asbestos had teeth? Basically, you know, that's kind of like what it came down to. So I came up with the idea, and the way it's ended up is, of course, there is an asteroid which didn't hit the Earth. It hit the moon instead. And that kicked up a big cloud of blue dust, which formed into a ring around the moon. And that ring started gradually drifting down to Earth, creating a bit of an environmental crisis, because it turned out that this dust had, very much like asbestos, is dangerous to breathe. And so there is a company which has set up these towers that blast huge clouds of air, of moisture into the air, because they've discovered by now that this dust are actually, what's the word, spores of an alien creature. But if you pepper them with water, they germinate and they clump into harmless colonies. So they think, okay, this is the solution. And so that's kind of the world premise, if you like. The story follows Tahira, who is... an eco-hydrologist who is monitoring the situation on Kashim Island in the Persian Gulf. And she makes some discoveries about these alien creatures, which are, of course, as we've discussed, rebekites, which changes her perception somewhat. But she finds she realizes that her findings are being inexplicably suppressed when she tries to raise them. And she ends up basically going on the run, accused as a terrorist. And has to be helped by her best friend, Zareen, who is, there's a whole other side of the book I haven't gone into now, is on the wrong side of a political divide between Iran and Azerbaijan.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Oh, I really enjoyed it because first of all, I like that it was set in a place where I had never read a book set in this location. Obviously, it's set into the future, kind of like the introduction is set in the 2050s, and then the main book takes place in the 2070s. So this is far into the future, but it also takes place in Iran, Arab countries. And so kind of talk a little bit about that, why you wanted to set it in this location versus where you're from or where other books usually take place.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's been a recurring theme for me. I've always loved meeting people from around the world, and not in a kind of a I want to get to know everything about this country sort of way, but just almost kind of like putting a pin in a map and like I'll meet someone from here and just get to know an individual person from there rather than just characterizing a whole country. And so a lot of my books have been set in unusual settings, other parts of the world. My third novel was a vampire novel set in Jordan in the Middle East, which I'm still very, very fond of, actually. But, there's enough vampire novels out there, I think, for that one to just sort of let it sit. But this book went through a few incarnations. And one of the very earliest ones actually had the asteroid hitting the Earth in, I just knew it needed to be a large inland body of water. So the obvious candidate was either going to be kind of the Great Lakes in America or the Caspian Sea. So I went with the less conventional option and thought, yeah, Caspian Sea, that'd be fun. And so of the neighboring countries, I did a little research into Azerbaijan, really got to know a lot of that country's history. And at this point as well, I was also thinking of doing it as kind of an alternative history story set in the 80s, because I've always loved the 80s aesthetic. And I think at the same time, I'd recently watched the Netflix series Chernobyl, and I just loved that kind of late 70s, early 80s kind of the blocky technology and everything's like hard plastic edges of everything. And I just loved that kind of sort of Soviet sort of feel to it. I didn't go with that in the end, even though I still to this day quite like the idea. By the time I decided to have the asteroid hit the moon, I'd already done a load of research into Azerbaijan. And in particular, I'd done a lot of reading into the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, which is not 9 times out of 10 people have no idea what I'm talking about with that. But it was a long-standing conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. Yeah, so I read a lot into that. And whilst reading about it, I hit upon a little idea about, an Azerbaijani kid and an Armenian kid making friends across the divide and then meeting together later on in life to help each other through whatever sort of crisis. And so, of course, that was where the whole Tahira Zareen thing was born. Naturally, in the end, because of what I wanted to do, it needed to be set in the future. Also, it would have been insensitive to actually include a literal Azerbaijani-Armenian thing, because that's still a very politically sensitive thing. So I contrived this different conflict between Azerbaijan and Iran, which I have to say, is completely fictional. I have had one or two people say, oh, wow, I didn't know everything about this conflict. It's very well researched. And they're like, no, I made it up. It's not actually happening. Azerbaijan and Iran are currently quite good relations, I think.
Right.
But I still wanted to incorporate that idea of two kids who are on different sides of a political divide and end up relying on each other later on.
Yeah, I like the political ties within the book, too, because it wasn't too it wasn't difficult to read. It was, you're just reading a story of fiction and there's these political things. And sometimes if you're reading like a political history fiction, it's like too dry. But with this, it wasn't. It was still the story carried on. It pushed forward. Even though you talked about the different political parts, it wasn't like it slowed it down. It sped it up a little bit and helped understand the characters, which I think was really cool. So, yeah, I'm glad to finally have read a book set in this location, because I've been trying to read books in different locations other than the States, because a lot of books are based in the States and I'm so sick of it. So I was excited. But yeah, so there's so much that goes on in this book, and there's so many different relationships and characters who evolve throughout the story. And especially from the introduction, these girls are 7, 8 years old, and then they grow up. Mm. And obviously their relationship is going to be changed as they're growing. And so talk a little bit about that relationship between these two women and how you kind of developed that whole dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of fun. And it was, if I hadn't been thinking about trying to make this book palatable for readers, I would have probably expanded that on that a lot more and focused a lot more on sort of, you know, bits of their history. Mm-hmm. During the beta stages, I actually had a few beta readers say that they would have liked to see more of the intervening years between when they were children and when they were adults. I did actually insert a little bit more in like chapter 3 of just, you know, to hear a kind of thinking about their childhood, just to kind of fill the reader in a little bit. But I thought to do any more than that is going to involve, I don't know, flashbacks or right. You know, like retroactive scenes or something. I'm like, that is going to slow the story down, so I can't justify that. But as I say, when I originally came up with the idea of two children on opposite sides of a political divide, because something I like to do as a writer is always challenge my own assumptions and ask myself, why am I doing it like that? Do I need to be doing it like that? Am I just doing it like that because everyone thinks it should be like that? And so naturally, when I first thought of this, I thought, oh, it's going to be a boy and a girl. And naturally, when they're in adults, there's going to be, you know, a romantic subplot between them or something from that. And then I thought to myself, well, actually, why should it be a boy and a girl? Why not two women? And why does it have to be romantic? Why not, you know, because another thing I've been really interested in the past few years is kicking back against the idea of they're just friends, you know. Pivotal relationships you have in your life, and so I thought, yeah, these are just it's just going to be just a friendship and two women, and from that point, I think they just kind of evolved quite organically. Actually, I think when I wrote that prologue, that was my process of deciding their personalities, and from that point, I just had to stick with it and be consistent. Also thinking about, you know, their different experiences, of course, you know, I really liked how one reviewer picked up on the fact that, you know, Tahira has lived in a fairly affluent city, you know, and you see her like in the glitz and glamour of the nightclubs and stuff. And then, you know, Zareen obviously been growing up in relative poverty and danger and under the oppression of a militant organization.
That's what I was going to say, was that dynamic that they grew up in such different areas, but because of their childhood friendship, they were able to like evolve and stay friends as adult and like bring back that history. And I just like how everything turned out where I'm not going to talk about the end, but you know, their just relationship throughout everything. I really liked how it evolved and yeah, with the whole nightclubs and everything, I liked that because it was like Zareen wouldn't ever have had that opportunity with her situation. And then even towards the end, Tahira mentions that in like her thought process. She was like, I want to bring Zareen to meet my friends and experience that. And I was like, Zareen's going to be out of her comfort zone, but I like it.
Yes, it is hard to imagine.
And speaking of characters, I always like to ask the author, who was your favorite character in the book, or who was your favorite character to write into the story?
It feels almost like a kind of a no-brainer in a way, because the whole thing is told from Tahira's point of view. Mm-hmm. And you know, she is really the only character who is present in the majority of the book. You know, there's obviously a lot of significant sections where Zareen isn't there, and all of the other characters are relatively minor. But I had a lot of fun developing Tahira, and she was a real exercise in creating a female character who is who is what she needs to be for the story, not necessarily who I want her to be. You know, it's like obviously you're treading a bit of a delicate path when you're a male author writing a female author, because there's an awful lot of traps you've got to try not to fall into, kind of, you know, idealizing or romanticizing your own character. Or so I was trying to be very careful not to do that. But also, I would also say actually Kaveri was a very fun character to create, because I didn't want him to be too sinister in a way. You know, I really liked actually what of course, you know, Tina Beyer, she said some interesting things about the book. And one of the things she said was that he, more than anything, is just an asshole boss. And I was like, yeah, actually, that's that. Because, yeah, for the most of the book, that's kind of all he is. Yeah, and he was a lot of fun to write. I always try to have kind of some images, you know, some sort of face claims, or some people would say, of this is what I imagine this character looks like. And sometimes you just sort of spend some time staring at that picture and like, what would this guy say? What would this guy do in this situation? I'm like, I think I know what this guy would do. Yeah, here we go. And yeah, so developing Kaveri was a lot of fun. Yeah. Another reviewer did say that he was almost a little bit cartoonishly stereotyped in the book, and I could kind of get that. But he also softened that by saying, well, you know, actually, you know, Darth Vader is probably one of the most cartoonish bad guys in history, and yeah, he's also one of the most beloved, so it's not necessarily a bad thing,
right?
But and yeah, you know, I suppose Kaveri also he puts on the whole misogyny thing quite strongly as well, so quite an easy one to throw in there to make to just make sure people know this is the bad guy, you know, the guy saying the misogynistic stuff. Yeah, this is the guy you're not supposed to like.
Oh yeah, definitely fun. And yeah, I liked, oh, I think I, my favorite was Zareen, because I just like her personality and her strength and her kind of like badassery type self. So
yes.
I think she was my favorite. Obviously, I always love the main character, but I always try to find like, who else do I love? So, I mean, I like both of them together. They're just great. Okay, so we got to talk a little bit about the science. You already dove into the fact that you work with asbestos and you see that type of lab work. So how much was that put into Tahira's job as an analyst? Well, she's, I guess, more of just scientist.
I think she's just described as a biologist.
Biologist, maybe. Yeah, that's what it was.
The department she heads up is ecohydrology, which is actually kind of looking at the health of water systems. So, which is kind of, it's not quite the same as what she trained for, but it's appropriate to the job she's doing now. So she's looking, you know, I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler if I say that what she's concerned about is, okay, great, we've got this solution for cleaning rubikites from the air, but these rubikites in the air are now going down into the ocean, and what effect is that having? And so, yeah, so ecohydrology is that sort of thing. Asbestos, obviously, is it's a naturally occurring mineral which was used in buildings for many years until we realized it's actually incredibly bad for you, and now it's being removed. And before, you know, you can do works in a building, you have to go and have an asbestos check. So, yeah, the link, of course, is that the most dangerous type of asbestos is blue asbestos. The proper name for blue asbestos is chrysidolite, and chrysidolite is the fibrous form of rubikite granite. So that's where the link is.
There you go. I did not know that.
There you go. Yeah. That was actually supposed to be kind of a fun little in-joke just for me, but because people where I work and people in my industry have picked up on the title of the book and actually been incredibly supportive, I've had a higher number of readers than I was expecting who have read it and actually know what rubikite is. And they were like, hey, that's the asbestos, isn't it? I'm like, yeah, okay. I wasn't expecting so many readers to know that. So yeah. So I've spoken about that a little bit more than I thought I would have done.
So cool. I love that there's that science, or like the tying in of the words that connects everything. Very cool. And then the other half of the science we have to talk about. Okay. So if this asteroid comes and hits the moon, would this actually happen? Would the moon be partially disintegrated, still swirling around the earth, or would it plummet into the earth and kill all of us? Like, how much research did you do with that concept of the story?
Some. Is the answer to that. Yeah. As much
Called
as I
fiction
felt
for
was,
a reason,
yeah,
right?
That's it. Exactly. I would be more worried if I thought this book was going to come under a great deal of scrutiny. You know, if I was kind of like, if I got to an Andy Weir level of success, then obviously I'd be worried. But then I've read Andy Weir, and I've seen enough scientific ridiculous things in there to know. I don't go, I love Andy Weir's books, but some of the things you kind of like, just no. But yeah, no, I tried to make it somewhat believable. You know, now the idea of the dust forming a ring, I genuinely don't know how plausible that is. You know, I think probably the Earth's gravity would distort it too much over time. I was also concerned, of course, about what an asteroid that big, what that would do to the moon's orbit. But I learned in my research that apparently for something to hit the moon and actually alter its orbit, the projectile would have to be pretty much as big as the moon itself. That holds up, at least. Yeah, I think the whole dust ring and the trail of dust coming down to Earth is just about enough scientifically plausible for people to find enough suspension of disbelief to accept that it could happen.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, people go into sci-fi because they want to experience something that's not reality. So,
right.
they can believe however much of it that they want. And I like the concept because I don't think I've read anything where, I mean, I think I've heard of a few different stories where the moon obviously changes with the tides and all that kind of stuff and that kind of science. But I don't know that I've ever heard of a book where something hits the moon and it changes the Earth. Basically. Right, anyway, right. It was a unique concept to me as a reader, which was fun.
And I love the visual of a moon with a big blue sparkly ring. But I thought, that's just kind of cool.
Yeah. And speaking of visual, so I have the paperback copy. And for those of you who are watching this, you can see the blue and the black, and that represents everything within the book. However, you have a new cover, relatively new cover for the ebook, that you kind of recreated to have a little bit more of the moon presence and everything. So what was that process like?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, the new ebook cover came about because I was just a little worried that the paperback cover, as much as I like it, I'm not sure it was making the book stand out enough. So that paperback cover, I actually designed that myself because I didn't want to pay anyone or go to the trouble of finding an artist or anything like that. I thought, I don't have to pay. I did one myself. And you know, I like it. It's got enough nods towards the book. But, you know, when I went around looking at other science fiction books, they tell you to do that, don't they? They say, look at what else is out there on Amazon and see what other covers look like. I'm like, oh, they all look, none of them really look like this. So yeah, I commissioned a different cover to be done. And I was really happy with what the artist did. They did a great job. They have already produced the covers to the next two books in the series as well, because I don't know, wouldn't it suck if an artist just disappeared off the face of the earth before you've got, so I thought, let's just get those in the bag right now. And that's almost kind of like writing a check to myself that I now have to write these books because I paid for the covers. I do think the new cover has helped on the ebook side of things, but and you know, the majority of my sales are ebooks, so I haven't felt too much pressure to transfer that cover. I can keep the paperback as kind of a nod towards the original.
Yeah, for sure. And it was funny, after I finished reading it, I looked at the back, and for whatever reason, I hadn't ever noticed the shell and the bullet on the back of the cover until I was done reading it. And then I was like, oh I'm not going to talk about that. A little bit of a spoiler, maybe.
But possibly, no. Yeah. But they are, I mean, as I said, they're right there on the cover. So, you know, anyone could look at those and see, oh, how do they fit into it? But that was actually a photo I took. So I actually do have a dummy bullet and the vulva shell here on my desk.
Very cool.
And I incorporated those as a little nod to that moment.
Yeah,
all just those little moments.
Little hidden in plain sight type of thing. I love it.
That's it.
Yes. And so you already mentioned there's at least another two books then in the series, because when I read it, I was like, okay, this technically, it could be a standalone. The epilogue makes me want to read more because the epilogue is very exciting. And we're not going to talk about it because people have to read the book before they get to the epilogue.
Yes.
But as I read the end of the book, I was like, okay, the book could be done. Obviously, there's more things that our characters could do to help the Earth in the future, but it could be a standalone. So now I'm hearing, all right, there is officially a second book in the works, potentially three. Is it going to be capped at three, or are you going to go longer?
I think it's going to be capped at three. I personally like standalone books better. That I read standalone books more often than series. And even when I start a series, I very often just, you know, go for the first book, go, that's enough for me, you know. So there's just been too many times when I've read a second book and I've just kind of like, I'd wished it had stopped at the first book.
Right.
But, and also, it's going to be a series, not in the kind of the ongoing story sort of way, but I don't know if you've ever heard of an author called Peter Kleins, he's a sci-fi author who did something called the Threshold series, which I really liked the way he did it. It was a series of books which do fit together in a certain order, but they are each essentially standalone books, you know, with some of the same characters kind of a major character from one makes a minor appearance in another, but each of the books are very much standalone, but they're set in the same universe. And they just kind of, there's little tie-ins, which if you read the other books, you appreciate the book more. So I kind of wanted to do something a bit more like that. Okay. So I already have the next two books essentially fully plotted out. So, okay, you know, the notes for them are all there, but they're not going to be just continuations of the same book. You know, the second book is going to be a little bit more of a kind of an 80s action movie feel, actually. So, okay, you know, in this book had the whole kind of social, friendship, political kind of thing going on alongside a little bit of an action thriller aspect of it. And, you know, trying to balance those two, I kind of wondered if I would get away with it. The second one is going to be really much more kind of an 80s action sort of feel, whereas the third one is going to be, I suppose, a little bit more cerebral, a little bit more about relationships and personality thing. Personality thing, that's eloquent, isn't it? yes, I know words. But yeah, the third one's going to have a bit more of that aspect to it.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, the second one is going to pick up partly where Rebukite ends. And, you know, Tahira is going to be one of the two point of view characters in the second book.
Very exciting. I'm excited to see what happens with her next. And yeah, I'll be definitely keeping an eye out for it. Well, cool. I'm excited to kind of see what happens with this story, with this series. Are you working on any other types of books right now, or are you just working on this series?
There's a few other plates I've got spinning, but you know, you have to be disciplined to try and focus yourself on one thing. So definitely book two of this series next. I also have a science fiction horror idea, which literally just flew into my head a few months ago, and I'm super excited about. It's going to be, I don't know if you've seen the movie Event Horizon, but if you enjoyed that, it's going to be that. It's imagine just a ghost ship in space. That's what we're talking about.
Ooh,
here.
Fun.
Actually. Yeah. So there's that. And I've also got one book, which I rarely ever talk about, but it's a book I've been writing for about 6 years. I don't know if it's got any sort of commercial value to it, but it's, you know, when you just got a book that this is the book I have to write before I die, sort of thing. You know, I don't have to write it soon, but I do have to write it at some point. And maybe I'll be the only person in the world who likes it or enjoys it. But yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
But apart from that, I've just got folders and folders on Google Drive of an idea I had one day, thought was brilliant. And then 3 days later, I was like, I'm bored with that now. I'm just going to file that away for a bit. You know, who knows what those will turn into.
Yeah, that sounds like me. Every time I have a dream that was really engaging, like in the middle of the night, I'll wake up and I'll write it down. I'm like, I'm going to write a book about this. It's so cool. I wake up and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to write a book about that. But that's how my series started, was actually a nightmare. So my series was, yeah, it was born out of a nightmare. And the dream really didn't have anything to do with what the story was, but it inspired the story. And so I definitely take my dreams to heart. Anytime I have a dream, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write it down. Usually it's nonsense, but sometimes there will be some nuggets in there that I'm like, okay, saving this for the future.
It always seems like a genius in the middle of the night, doesn't it?
Yes. Like, I'm going to be the next J.K. Rowling with this idea. And then I wake up and it's talking about like pigs and rainbows. So I'm like, no.
That's just the whole idea. It's just pigs in rainbows written on a scrap of paper by the side of the bed. You're like, what does this mean?
I swear it was more eloquent when I was dreaming about it, but you never know. All right. So this is Read It With Whiskey. It wouldn't be Read It With Whiskey without talking a little bit about whiskey. And honestly, I think you know way more about whiskey than I do. So what is your favorite whiskey to drink?
Oh man, that's hard. Yeah, I mean, I knew this question was coming, and I'm gonna have to restrain myself more than ever. So I used to run a blog called the British Bourbon Blog, because at the time I started it, there was a big old bourbon scene happening here in the UK. And I've actually brought it with me. This is my little tasting notes book going back a long time, and I've got 250 different American and Canadian whiskies in there that I've written tasting notes for. Now, you may have some listeners who are thinking, actually, that's not a particularly impressive number because they live in America and they can, you know, any new whiskey that comes along, they can try it. But bear in mind that I live in the UK and I'm now at the point where finding an American whiskey I haven't tried before is an extremely rare occurrence. And when it happens, I will pay whatever it takes to taste it. You know, like £40 a shot. Yep. Give me one. But the one I always have in the cupboard is Woodford Reserve. That's my kind of go-to favorite one. These past couple of years, there's been a new distillery putting out called New Riff, which is really good. They've got a few really good expressions. single nicest whiskey I've ever tried, which unfortunately I know I will never get to try again because it was a 1 year thing. And when it was gone, it was gone. Was one of the Woodford Reserve Masters editions, which was finished in maple barrels. And that was just nectar of the gods.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. If you ever track down some of that, probably not.
Absolutely.
Ever,
yeah. But you've got a better chance than I do of coming across it in a bar somewhere, but you never know. You never know.
You never know.
I'd say if I did find a bottle of that, I tell you, I'd be remortgaging the house to get a bottle of it.
I love it. Oh, so much fun. Well, this has been such a great time. I'm so excited that we got to talk. And yeah, I'm excited to see what comes out next from you. So thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Take it easy.
What a fun interview. I had so much fun talking to O.R. Lee. I just looked on his Amazon page and he does have release dates for the second and third book in the Bruised Moon Sequence book series. And yeah, you definitely do not want to miss out. We did briefly talk about some of the other projects he has going on, but they are all up and ready to go on Amazon. You can check him out by looking at his Amazon author page and everything is listed right there. Easy access. All right, you guys, let's talk about what's coming up next. Next time on Read It With Whiskey, we're going to be talking to N.C. Scrimger, and she is the author of Those Left Behind. This is an epic space science fiction book, and ooh, it is action-packed. You do not want to miss it. That's coming up next time. Until then, talk to you soon.
You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I am your host, Laura Gentinen, and I just wanted to personally hop in and say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would really appreciate it if you could go onto your favorite podcast platform and rate and review the show. By rating the show, you're going to help more people find the podcast so then we can grow. Once you review the show, share it on your social media, share your favorite episode with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.